Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community. On Monday, July 4th, we had an excellent show on Conscious Corner with Professor Amin Ra and historian Joe Hembrick. The two guests that we had was dynamic. We had Professor Reginald Muhammad and Minister Michael Muhammad. And it just was an excellent show. Let me share with everybody the show. So here it is right here. It's a must hear, in my opinion. It's the Conscious Corner from Monday the 4th. Reginald Muhammad, Michael Muhammad, the National Reparations Declaration. It was an excellent show. So I encourage everybody to look at that one. All right. So I am your host, Rasaki Mascani. And our guest for this evening is Dr. H. The topic is why minorities need, especially Black people, need to invest their money. Very important topic this evening. So let me tell you about Dr. H a little bit. He is a colleague of mine from Centennial High School. And Dr. H joined us in the spring of 2021, if I'm correct. And if I'm incorrect, he can correct me. But that's when he joined us. But this past school year, 2021-22 school year, both of us worked closely together with our students. And I tell you, it was a great experience. We were able to put our minds together and do the best we could for our students. So, and then also, that doctor title says that he's actually a educational doctor. So he do have his doctorate degree, but he has so much humility that he doesn't even use that title at the school. So I want to commend him on him not being a person of, you know, a person that walks around with his chest out saying, oh, I got a doctorate, because we have people that's like that. And I don't think that that's really necessary. Let your actions show how you are in life and not your title, you know. But I take my hat off to this brother because he does really good for the student. So, Dr. H, how are you this evening? And please tell us anything you want us to know about yourself and start your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for everybody coming here tonight. I want to jump in with like a little story of how like got into investing, because it happened. I actually started as at UC Santa Barbara. That's where I did my undergrad, and I was an economics major. So at first I went in undeclared. Then I took an economics class, and this was like in the 90s. So this was like kind of at the birth of the internet coming on, being a part of our lives. And so I was at the computer lab, right? We had a project of looking at a company that see, and it was actually Toys R Us, and see what's their prospects, see if they're going to grow, see if they're declining, the whole ins and outs, right? Now, again, this is for me, the infancy of the internet in the about early 90s when I went to the computer lab and did this project. So we go there, and I was fascinated by all of this information was like online. Like all the stuff is that we're always thought, like, you know, back in the day, you needed a broker, you need to know somebody, you need to call them up, and you need to say, can I get this income statement? Can I get this balance sheet? And it was all there for the world to see. All I had to do is put in like address. And it blew my mind. I was like, I turned to one of my, because it was a group project, turned to one of my group projects, like, is all the information online like this? And he was like, yes, you know, and it fascinated me. It's like, this is breaking that barrier of how to get into investing. Now, another funny story. So I got excited about that, got a good grade on the project. Then I went to my dad, looked up this company. I won't say what the company was, asked him to invest some money and so on and so forth. And this was back in the early 90s. And I just saw my dad is still alive, 2022, thank goodness. And, you know, about a month ago, that company didn't do well and stuff. And it actually lost the money. You know, he's still asking about that money and what happened to that, what happened to that company. So to start off, my first endeavor was not good, but it didn't stop me. And that's the point I also want to make, is that doing some research on this, I'm not necessarily going to talk about the hot stock tip, invest in this, invest in that. The key is to invest, or in particular companies. The key is to invest, period. And I did some research on it. And if you don't mind, if we share the screen, if I had allowed shared screen access, I want to show this a paper that I saw online. So do I have the shared screen access? Okay. All right. Okay. Let me go to first. Let me pop it up. Been a while since I've been on Zoom. So give me a second here. Okay. All right. Let me share the
screen. So you didn't have anything particular you wanted to share about yourself besides the story?
Yeah, it's fresh. Pretty much, like I'm a low-key guy. He pretty much like said it, you know, pretty much the information. I appreciate what you said, but I just wanted to like delve into it and so on and so forth and let the people know, you know.
That's fine.
So anyway, let me so this is what it says. As you see, can everybody see the screen? It said, yes, investment behavior factors that limit African Americans' investment behavior. And like I said, with my story, like I start off, like I lost like money from my dad. My dad still asked me about it years later, right? And one part, and let me scroll down to number 9. And as you see, it was done by 2018 by Crystal Hutchinson, John Long, Sophia Analog from Clark University and University of Georgia. And so they did a research paper on what limits African Americans from investing. And let me scroll down to number 9, where they had a bunch of or page 9 here, where they had a bunch of questions and theories on why this is the case. And in a roundabout way, I kind of did it at my initial aspect. Now, they also give the reasons why they did well. I mean, why African-Americans do invest and why African-Americans don't invest. And as you see from H1 all the way to H10, where it said African-Americans less likely to invest in the stock market compared to Caucasians. And this is true. And this is why there is that wealth gap, because there are Caucasians, and I'll use them as majority because it's not just Caucasians, but of all racial lines of people who are taking that risk. So I call them the investing class, okay, and the non-investing class. And yeah, the investment class, they do take that risk. They take that risk out there because from the old Roman saying is that fortune favors the brave, is that, yeah, it is a risk. But also at the same time, it's not the risk of you shouldn't invest your mortgage, invest your rent, invest your light bill. This should be money after you paid those bills that you should invest money into the stock market. And so, but I wanted to scroll down to this part where I want to go to this part right here, where at H10, African-Americans will report, I do not want to lose my money as one of the top 3 reasons for not investing in the stock market. Now, even though my father, he done his investments on and so forth and done well for himself, and I've moved past that stage back in the early 90s and done, you know, so far so good for myself. I don't want to lose money part. But here's the thing. It's about, stock market is about ownership, owning shares, okay? So with that being said, I saw something earlier today by Dr. Omar Johnson, who was on The Breakfast Club. And he talked about this mentality of, I'm actually stop sharing the screen. So he talked about this mentality of how status symbols is the reason a lot of African-Americans get the materialistic things, because they've been told for years and years and years that they are not at the top. They are underappreciated, underrepresented, pretty much you're nothing. So that's why go out and get material things of fancy car. You're talking about the Mercedes Benz, the fancy clothes, the fancy jewelry. Because when you see, if anybody's NBA fans, when you see the NBA players walk into the arenas, it's almost like a fashion show. They have their big ropes around their neck. They had their fancy clothes. But let me ask you this. When's the last time you saw Warren Buffett have a big rope chain around him? All right. Because all he cares about is the ownership of the stocks. Now, coming from being a slave descendant, coming back that we didn't have nothing and we was the workers in the fields and so on and so forth, is that the simple fact of like, it's amazing, still amazing to me, is that you can own one share of a company, no matter what the company is, Apple, Microsoft, Coca-Cola, Kellogg's brand. That was something that was not given opportunity when we landed here long ago, you know? And the simple fact, like, that opportunity is now there, but yet we're still not taking advantage of it. One share in a company, no matter what that company is, you're the owner of that company. You're now owner. You're changing mentality from being the worker to now being the owner. And like I said, when we came over here, we were definitely the workers. And some people still have that slave mentality of, as soon as I get my paycheck, I'm going to get materialistic because I need to show my status symbol. There's this show on national radio. You can get a podcast, a guy named Dave Ramsey. And I'm going to go into him, but he's an investor, so on and so forth. But when he comes back from commercial, he says this: owning a home, paid off mortgage, is the new status symbol and not the Mercedes Benz. So that's how the investment class is thinking. That's their mentality, is that the materialistic, yeah, it's fine. Like I said, it's fine. You got your Mercedes, you got all the nice clothes on and so forth. But having that mentality of owning, that's the key. Owning, that will bridge the racial, that will bridge the wealth gap. You have to own. You have to have a mentality of owning. Matter of fact, Ice Cube, or his real name, O'Shea Jackson, went to his uncle. One time he said he wanted to play for the Lakers, right? His uncle said, no, you want to own the Lakers. Now, if you look at every movie that Ice Cube has been in since Friday, which he directed and produced, and actually came on last night, that movie's almost like 30 years old, and he's still making money because he owns it, all right? Every movie he's been in, he's been executive producer. He's owning it. Every time you see an old Ice Cube movie, you put money in his pocket because he has the owner mentality for what his uncle said. So that's where we need to come in and start teaching our young people about ownership. But how do you do it if you don't know? You know, you don't know what you don't know. Like, for instance, I'm not going to start talking Chinese because I don't know Chinese. All right. So I'm not also just out the blue just start talking it. So how do you do it? The first thing we have to do is start with financial literacy. Now, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars have been invested in the STEM program of science, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, right? But when we add another acronym to it, you know, doesn't come out as well, called STEMF, where it is science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and financial literacy, okay? Because going back, let me see, share the screen here. Let me go back to share the screen. Going back to this part right here, where it says H8, African Americans will report, I do not understand how the stock market works, as one of the top reasons for not investing in stock market. These are the barriers, because now the barriers have changed. Because back when I was earlier in the 80s and 90s, you need to know a stockbroker, you need to give a commission, you need to pay, you need to make a phone call for the stock market close and put your order in. Now, all you need is an app on your phone, and everybody has a smartphone. And everybody also has smart computers. So that's all you had to do. So that barrier of entry has lessened. But yet still, African-Americans are not investing as the Caucasians are, or the investing class. They're not moving and ascending, into the investment class because they not understand the stock market. So that's where we have to invest in at the educational system, and not just like in high school. Like, so we work at a high school. It has to start earlier than that, because in my past, I worked the whole K-12 system. So I worked at elementary schools, worked at middle schools. It has to start, kid you not, as soon as they learn the ABCs, they also need to know an income statement. It is literally that serious, because of the gap is so wide and it's getting wider. Yes, during this time we're taping, July 6, 2022, the stock market is in negative territory for the whole year, or for the first half of the year. But it's not going to stay there forever. And this is the opportunity to get in. but also two, you need to know what you know. So that's why it needs to be more investment. It's funny about America, right? America, they can print money out of thin air. Like for instance, like they're giving money to the Ukraine, $40 billion, just like that, right? No money for the homeless, no money for this, that, and the other. And I was saying to like a coworker, well, what if we get Ukraine $38 billion and two of that billion can go to investing in financial literacy within urban communities where they're not represented as much, you know, because only time, because minorities and especially Black people think that the only way that they can get out is through entertainment, be an entertainer, or get out of their social, or let me backtrack, to elevate their social economic status is through entertainment, be a singer, dancer, rapper, or the case may be, or through sports, primarily like basketball or football. But as we know, with sports, especially basketball, there's about, 30 teams. There's really not an opening on every team every year. There's not like 15 openings. There's only like really two, all right? So that means, 30 times two is 60, but it's not 60 openings every year. Sometimes it may be just like 30. So all these African-American boys out there all over the country playing basketball because it's easier. All you need is a basketball and a hoop. But yet there's only 30 spots, maybe. 1 year is 30 spots, 1 year is 42 spots, 1 year is 10. And that's it. But yet you got literally probably a million African-American boys out there playing basketball for the hoop dream, all right? Matter of fact, let me go to this aspect. Let me share the screen again and show another part of people we know and also people we may or may not know. Okay. Now, these two billionaires right here, I'm about to show, as very familiar, especially this part right here, this area where we got Michael Jordan, billionaire. LeBron James, also a new minted billionaire. And that is wonderful and that is great. Seriously, it is wonderful and it's great that these two men came from where they came from, not from money, but they use their athletic prowess to become billionaires, okay? But then that's the key. Michael Jordan and LeBron James are generational talent, all right? Not everybody is Michael Jordan and not everybody LeBron James. So the reason they got in was through basketball. But however, as I just stated, not everybody, despite what they think, is a great basketball player out there playing in Rutgers Park or playing at the local park, all right? So they have ascended, but they started through their athletic prowess, right, to get to where they're going. Now, I want to show you a gentleman who does not necessarily has that athletic prowess, but he has more money than Michael Jordan and LeBron James combined. And remember, both of them are billionaires. This gentleman right here, Robert Smith, chairman executive of Vista Equity Partners. Okay. Maybe he played basketball back in high school, but I haven't seen him recently in the NBA or on the NFL gridiron. But he created a hedge fund. And he's the CEO of the hedge fund. Has $4 billion. Young people do not know about him. They know about Michael Jordan and LeBron James. But even when they know about Michael Jordan and LeBron James, they know about their athletic prowess. I want to see next time on SportsCenter, Michael Jordan's business model on how he became a billionaire. I want to see on SportsCenter, LeBron James' model, business model, how he became successful. Robert Smith, somebody who everybody should know as they know Michael Jordan and LeBron James, do not. Okay, he's somebody I need to celebrate. Okay, he did it educationally. And this was listening, going back to Dr. Umar Johnson, who I heard on the Breakfast Club, he's saying that if you have the slave, or I'm paraphrasing, but you have the slave mentality of being a worker and just focus on your athletic prowess and America's focus on your athletic prowess, you'll only go so far. Yes, LeBron James and Michael Jordan made it to the top of their profession. And currently, as we speak right now, LeBron James is still at the top of his profession. But they didn't stop there. They branched out. Well, what we need to, but at the same time, we need to tell our youth is that you're going to get to the top by here. And we need to start training them to get to that. Not, let's go like this. There's a summer camp for basketball. There's a summer camp for football. We need summer camps for financial literacy. It need to be that many. You need to hear the single mom saying, I'm going to take my son and daughter to financial camp. All right. I'm going to work that overtime to take them to financial camp over the summer. Because, again, hey, I love football. I love basketball. But, again, there's too many hoop dreams that are dying. And there's too many football dreams that, again, that's just not the case. Okay. You're just not going to make it. All right. And even if you do make it, the average NFL player lasts 3 years. We only glorify the ones who've been there forever, like Tom Brady and Odell Beckham and Matthew Stafford and George Kittle. Okay, these names we've heard for a while because they are superstar athletes, but there's a lot of athletes, max 1-2 years at best. They're going to have a whole training camp next month. Well, later this month, preseason next month. And yeah, a lot of players who are very athletic are not going to make the teams that they're going out for. So what do they do the rest of their life when they're 25, 26 years old? Education as far as financial literacy, as far as investing in the stock market. And that's what we're not doing because we're not understanding what to do. Any questions so far? I just keep rambling.
So what I do is I'm going to start with Miss Linda. Miss Linda, how are you this evening? Can you unmute, please?
Oh, yes, I'm good this evening. Thank you.
Good. Do you have a comment or a question for Dr. H?
No, Dr. H, this is excellent information, but I have one question. You mentioned about a financial camp for youth, and we're in the midst of summer now. What about after the summer? Is there any financial camps that you know of?
Well, it's well like this. I was saying it as far as because there's a focus on basketball camps in the summer and football camps in the summer because those are the off seasons. I'm for camp, just like there's football camps all year round and basketball camps all year round. I'm for financial camps all year round because it takes that. And it takes, and also too, it has to be, and like I said, this is bigger than me, but it has to be at the point where like, it has to be like mandatory. Just as math class is mandatory through the K-12 system, it has to be that. And not just for Black people, but also for all, because how many people you hear saying living paycheck to paycheck, and they're still making a lot of money. I hear even people making six figures, still living paycheck to paycheck because they don't have the financial literacy. And so we need those camps. We need that education where we become the investment class, because here's the thing about it. United we stand, divided we fall, as Abraham Lincoln said back in the day, so on and so forth. But they keep the races divided by the colors. You know, like if you're Black, you're over here, you're Latino over here, you're Asian, you're over here, so on and so forth. But there's only two true colors that America truly, truly, truly cares about. Everything else is just a division of the colors. That's green and gold. Okay. If you have green, if you have gold, you can ascend up into the social class where like all of a sudden, like where they would say like, I didn't know he was Black, you know. Okay. All right. Because he's, you know, he has like that much, right? Like, it never occurred to me they were Latino, you know? Like, okay. So they moved up into that ascension, okay? When you get to the green and gold level. And that's the true two colors that America cares about, green and gold. The Blacks versus Caucasians, Latinos versus Blacks, all that is divisive. For, honestly, for the people on top, because they can profit from that, from exploitation, okay? And that's also part of financial literacy. You got to understand is like, who's exploiting you? So you will not be exploited.
Okay, Dr. A. So, yes, sir. So I'm glad you came home this evening. I have a challenge for you. You're bringing up these excellent points, which need to be carefully looked at. So my challenge to you is either through a venue from the Community Education Network or some other venue, you start spearheading these type of financial camps, you know, financial literacy camp, because we are in that business of doing these type of things. We got Brother Machinda on here. We got Brother Joe Hembrick, historian Joe Hembrick. We got Brother Doctor, and all of them are, you know, they're into investments. I'm not proud to say, but I'm not all that great in that area, but hey, as long as I'm around, I get better. But yeah, that's just something for you to think about. So I'm going to go to Brother Doctor. Brother Doctor, can you unmute, please? Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Questions or comments for Dr. H?
May I ask another question, please?
Go ahead, Ms. Linda.
Yes. My other question is, you mentioned that there is an app to learn how to invest in stock. Can you name me some apps that I can? Because I've never invested, but I've always been curious and wanted to do it.
Okay. I'll be honest with you. It's literally like a Google search because there are tons of apps like put in like how to invest. But as far as trading platforms, so let me correct that. Trading platform as far as like eTrade.com, Charles Schwab. I wouldn't necessarily mention Robinhood right now. But those two, E-Trade, Charles Schwab, is where, kid you not, all you need to do is just open up with like $5. Okay?
Really?
I mean, yes. It's like, that's another thing, like barriers. A lot of people think you need to come to the table with $10, $20, $30,000. No, that may have been the old way. I'm not sure, you know, it was before my time. But I know the new way is that you open up an account and you can invest, you can put in $5. Now, granted, that $5 not going to take you so far. You know, maybe you want to start with like $100, but still, $100 is a lot cheaper than $10,000, $20,000. And all you have to do is just start doing the research, which, again, as I stated with my story before, when I was back in the 90s at UC Santa Barbara looking up companies online, it's still there today. And it's even more information than it was back then. So yeah, the eTrade.com, CharlesSchwab.com, MerrillLynch.com, like all of these where they allow the barrier of entry has like lessened where people can get in. Because again, I still don't know no broker, you know? I mean, I have a broker like for my mutual funds, so on and so forth, but direct individual stocks, I don't have a broker. I do the research, do it myself, and so on and so forth. Matter of fact, a friend of mine who I know literally since ninth grade, and we're the best of friends. Matter of fact, I insult him by calling him my friend. He's more like my brother from another mother, as they say. And I've known him for all these years, and he works in probation, supervisor, doing his thing. And kid you not, last year, he said that he has a pension, so on and so forth, you know, works with the county. But he said he doesn't invest. And it blew my mind because we've been through this, that, and the other. You know, we hang out together since ninth grade. We involved in each other's lives. And one of the things, like, I just always, like, assume he did because he's doing well for himself. But in all the conversations we've had from serious to silly, we've never had until last year an investing conversation. And I think what stuck in his head, which is true for me, is that when I bought my home about now 5 years ago, the down payment was from my investments. And that always kind of, like, stuck with him. I was like, yeah, like, and that's the one thing I have trouble doing, selling the shares, because I'm such a long-term investor. Like, I'd rather have a heart attack than sell a share, right? But nevertheless, you know, for the greater good, sold the shares. That was my down payment, got the home sold and so forth. And yeah, and that just stuck in his head. So what we did, me, him, and another friend of mine, October of last year, we together pool our money every month, and we opened up an E-Trade account. And we put our money in on the 17th, and I'm stock picker, and I see what we have, so on and so forth. Now, I mean, again, this year has been a tough year, so I'm not going to say like, oh, it's just raining money, so on and so forth. But here's the thing about it. It's still good to buy these discounts, okay, because that's another thing. It's like at one point the stocks were getting like too high where like I couldn't continue to, well, I could continue to invest, but it costed more money. Now, getting them at a discount, still solid companies, not old crappy company, you know, .com. It's like still solid companies that has been discounted. So it's kind of like your favorite shirt. It's like, you have a favorite shirt, it costs $80. Like, I don't know about $80, but I really like that color. Well, now it's $50. Okay, you still like that color, right? You still think it looks good on you? We would jump at that. It goes from 80 to 50. Sometimes people are scared because, again, about the losing money, what I showed before is that if a stock goes from 80 to 50, but if the fundamentals are still there, if the fundamentals are still there as far as solid growth, profit margins are in line, PE ratios are in line, if it's still a solid company and it's at a discount, why not get into it if you've done all your research and say, okay, I can deal with this. I can deal with this company and it's at discounted. We will get that shirt on a discount. Why can't we get that stock on a discount? Now, with that being said, we don't want to continue to be discounted once we buy it, you know. But if it's cheap now, jump in, because again, Albert Einstein said this, the greatest force, and again, the guy who invented the theory of relativity, or discovered it, I should say. Again, smart man, we all know Einstein, so on and so forth, or his background. He said this, the greatest thing man ever invented was compound interest. So that being said, you put your money in on the low, do it long term, and watch it rise again, if again, it's a quality company.
Okay, let's go to Brother Doctor.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, I agree with everything he says, and to the young lady Linda, I would just go to YouTube. There's so much information on trading stocks on YouTube. It'll just overwhelm you. It's a lot of beginning stuff. Some of the companies Dr. H mentioned, yeah, you can sign up with a broker account and they call it a thing called paper trading. You can open up an account and you can just, you can start out with like $100,000 of play money and trade and see how you do till you get it down. And once you get it down, you can add money to the account and start trading. But that'd be one of the best avenues. Go on YouTube. Just type in, learn how to trade stocks, and you see people coming up. You see some stuff, just a bunch of them. And like he said, those companies he's mentioned, like he's right, stay away. And I'm not going to talk bad about Robinhood, and I can't remember what the other one was. There's two of them out there. And like you said, I've been with, and I don't want to make recognition. I use three or four brokers right now. I talked about one that when I had Scottrade. I used to love Scottrade.
Okay.
They were taking over. And, you know, they had an office right down the street. I can go down and talk to them. And, you know, but yeah, all the companies mentioned, good companies, great companies. Start out paper trading. You can go in there and buy stocks, sell stocks. And there's so much facet to it, to trading stocks. I'm the guy that bet against stocks. I bet against everybody. I always bet stuff going down. I'm a options guy. I do puts and calls and cover calls. There's things where you can buy stocks and rent your stocks out, like a rental. You get money every month off of your stocks. Dividends, buying stocks with that give quarterly dividends, and you getting this in every. There's so much to it. Even I started out even with commodities. I used to trade feeder cattle. Feeder cattle. God, what's the other stuff? Just remember feeder cattle because that was my last one. Feeder cattle, oil, sugar, and all the commodities you can name. You know, currency. I started out doing that currency stuff, man. Doing that day trading currency back in the day when it was a thing, back about 25 years ago. But yeah, man, you're right. Invest a couple of bucks a month, $5 a month, $10 a month. You know, you're not sure, just invest in things you won't, you know, that's going to be here forever, like the Walmarts and Amazons. If you think it's going to be here forever, you'll never lose no money. It'll go up and down here and there, but you'll never lose your whole investment. You know, their companies will be around forever. You know, something safe. You got kids just born, buy them some, you know, Apple, Microsoft, Walmart, stuff that you know is going to be around forever. That money be safe forever. And one other thing I could just say, if you're working,
the 401k?
Not 401k. What's the other one? Where you, I got two accounts. I can't even, the Roth IRAs, where you put your money in now, anything you make, you can take it out tax-free because it's already taxed. So the Roth IRAs, you can put money in there. If that thing grows, you can take it out tax-free. They have a limit based on your year, your age, how much you can put in every year. But if you're working, you want a Roth IRA, a regular, IRA, and a regular trading account just to trade and get you, like I said, I got 7, 8, 5, 6, 7 account, wherever I got, you want a day trading account, Roth IRA, regular IRA, and just a regular account, just a day trade or, a little trade here and there. When you see something, you just want to buy. But everything's on the internet. You can find everything. I got back here before the internet, like you were saying, I got $30,000, $40,000 worth of books here. I bought everybody's book, everybody's program. I went to everybody's seminar. I've done it all. Lost a lot of money, made a lot of money. I'm not rich, but, I know the ins and outs. Talked to a lot of people who is in the market, a lot of crooks, a lot of people got arrested that's inside of the market. You got the dark pools. There's so much facet to this game. But, yeah, just going on the internet, learn a little bit. And he's right. Put in $10 a month, $20 a month. Buy something. Buy something that you see out, like I said, Walmart, something that you just see around everywhere. Gas companies, gasoline companies, the Shells. I know a partner of mine, he went all in on Hess 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he bought in with when it was 20-something bucks, or 19 bucks, because I was explaining to him how to get in and do a limit order. And he went in with a limit order around 18, 19 bucks. And he just sold at the beginning of the year at 96 bucks, man. You can make a lot of money, yeah, it lose a little bit if we get greedy, like they say, man, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, man. You can't get too greedy. That's it for me.
All right, thanks, brother Doctor. Brother Mashinda.
I'm broke, brother. I don't have any money. How you doing? Yeah. Look. What you gonna say, Rasky?
Now don't sit up and lie to us. You are not broke.
No. Okay. I have a job, but I appreciate what Brother Doctor just said. He concurred with Brother Dr. H. And I must say that from the financial literacy conversation that you're having. And then, moving your way through kind of explaining, some of the things about stock, I've been on that path probably for the last maybe 2.5 years, I would say, on the honest, being honest, because I was one, I'm a seasoned veteran in the game of life. I've been around a while. And I wasn't raised from a financial literacy standpoint. I was watching my mother and my father, they divorced, of course, at some point when I was young. So watching moms pay those bills, struggle, light bills, things like that. So had a sense of, developed kind of a sense of urgency to try to do something in life, not so much being rich, having that concept, but more or less, like what's going on? Why are we in this position? So at an early age, I start, thinking about those things, but at the same time, as life, as I matriculated through life, I had good ideas, things would pop in my head. I was confronted with some good things, but never really honed in on spending the time to put toward learning the financial literacy, on the next level, becoming a student of the game. And so At some point in my young 20s, a friend of mine was going to that lived across the street from me, living in Compton, and I came home from school in the summer, and he was going to a real estate class with Century 21. I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Well, I want to be a mortgage broker one time, but I'm gonna go take this real estate sales class and, you know, work my way through." And he talked about it. He said, "You want to go with me?" Anyway, I joined the class with him. And so long story short, that was the beginning of me trying to understand about investing. You know, we were talking real estate. And so what I reflecting back, and what I tell a lot of my students and people that I deal with still on a daily basis, is that, I tell them my story. And then, of course, I tell them the same thing that you're saying, Dr. H. You know, it's like, you know, like I deal with community college students who are coming in, whether they get a trade or, you know, some kind of, associate degree. But I not only do I involve myself, you know, in their lives on a regular basis, weekly, and I have conversations about schoolwork, homework, those kind of things. But like when they're getting ready to graduate, and one of them particularly, and this happened to be a little white guy, but I've told plenty of brothers and sisters, don't get me wrong, because, you know, I have a passion for that because I know my story, and we can relate more. And there is a divide. You know, not only there's the digital divide, there's a financial literacy divide, all these divides. Of course, we were divided up, as Brother Hembrick always talks about, you know, how they, you know, they tripped out, Brother Ra and the rest of the guests who talk about how, so, okay, we've been divided, we haven't been conquered though, but we've been through a lot. But financial literacy is something that I was having that conversation today with one of our deans at another campus. We have six campuses, and one of them, sister, and we were just talking about that. And she's close in my age, and she said, in our generation, we didn't get that. And so I said, you know what? Kind of like your boy, Dr. H, he didn't get it, you know? Although he was your boy, well, I got a lot of intelligence. I had a buddy he bought a house right up by the campus that's worth about $2 or $3 million now that he sold. Well, that's another story, but he wish he would have hung on to it, but he made some money. He was trying to tell us about real estate back when I was 18 years old. I mean, well, 19 years old. But I heard it and I was listening, but I didn't take the time to learn. So I always talk about, you have to learn the industry-based jargon. You have to understand, you know. So back to what you're talking about with E-Trade. For myself, a couple of years ago, I opened up an account with TD Ameritrade. I invested in a couple of things. Won't name the stocks because I put $150 in there. It's down to like $32, you know, I went in ignorant, but it was just something that I thought I would invest in so I can, and I didn't care about the $150. It was kind of a low tuition. It was more or less that I'm going to use those investments, and then I'm going to look at these charts and all these educational resources that they have to offer, kind of like what you're referring to. Also, And so I have a little nephew that I'm helped raising, and I talked about him on the podcast before. He's 16 now. He just got a job. First thing he said, he called, he has a car, but he needed a ride to work because he don't have his driver's license. I said, you stay out that car till you get your license. Yes, sir. So I picked him up and I dropped him off at work. We had a little time in the parking lot. You know what he said? Hey, I'm getting my checks now on Friday. What about those stocks you've been talking about? You know, I said, okay, he had a few minutes. I said, this is what all of the kids are digital savvy now. The iPhone is a computer. The Samsung Galaxy is a computer. So they have this powerful tool in their hand. And so instead of gaming and playing games and texting and TikToking, we all like to, you know, have entertainment. Nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, use it as a tool, young brother. And so anyway, but he already know because he spent a little time with me. But he asked me about the stock. I said, I want you to put in Google AAPL. He put AAPL in there and he knew immediately. He said $141. He knew that that was per share. I said, well, check this out. And he read up. It used to be $6.99 or whatever and more, you know. And I said, I tried to talk to him about stock splitting and dropping, the prices go down. He was catching on. He started moving that chart and he said, look what happened here in this time, you know. I'm like, okay, so I'm gonna work with him. So he's a work in progress. And so, and I'm saying this is just a small micro, a little example of what you're talking about, this financial literacy. And so today in my mind before I got on this podcast. Now, I will admit, in my subconscious, it might have been that I wanted to see what tonight's topic was, and it was I read it, and so maybe that kind of got my brain thinking. But I did have a conversation with the lady I told you about earlier in the day, and I just bought a piece of property, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna start having some financial literacy classes with these young children. You know, I said, I haven't did it yet, but I said, this is what, but you know, my plate is full. I said, but it's imperative that I incorporate that into my journey, you know? And so anyway, it's not only inspirational and your conversation is provoking a lot of enthusiasm, but you're dead on it because the generational gap of you know, a lot of people that I know, they're, you know, don't own anything because they don't know. And so what I'm saying, so back to the conversation I was having with the young lady this morning, we were talking about like leaving property and leaving investments for your, you know, for your children or your descendants, and, you know, to pass it on, you know, generational wealth like other people do, you know, buy land because they're not making any more land, you know, different things like that. So anyway, you kind of got me excited about that. And, I know I go on YouTube. Brother Doctor was talking about YouTube, the Earn Your Leisure Network, EYL. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but it's popular now because they got a lot of like Steve Harvey and different folks have been on there. They just invited all kind of, they had Mark Cuban, billionaire, on there. So they're blowing up. But they have free information that talks about charting and understanding the stock market. For the lady that was on, go to EYL Network. I don't work for them. I didn't even invest in them in terms of, they have a university where you can spend money. I wish I would have spent the $200 or $300 that it costs to be a part of it, but I'm skeptical. And I'm like, well, I can still learn. I know there's enough information out there that's free. And then of course I pay for certain things.
You accidentally muted yourself.
Brother Mashinda, well, see now, my wheels are turning.
IL, it's called Earn Your Leisure Network, okay, and they got these back. Two brothers. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you now. Hear me right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, that phone was ringing, but I was saying that if you go to EYL Network YouTube, just go to YouTube and type in the search EYL, and it'll pop up. And they have these two brothers. They have the Monday. You know, they talk about. What goes on every Monday, they talk about what's going on with the stocks and things like that, do a whole overview, and they have a lot of classes. So you might want to even invest in their program if you think that's, if you can afford it, to where they have a lot of information, breakout sessions, and only for the members and things like that. But I've learned a lot. And back to the brother, see, I'm going to talk all day. You better cut me off, Rusty. So the bottom line is that compounded interest, a lot of people don't understand that, because it's like, man, a lot of people say, I ain't gonna open that up because I can't afford that, not have that little $50, that little $100 out my check. But they don't realize, I opened up an account one time back in 2003, I had about, and in 2008, you know, I was having like $25 coming out my check, that was it. And after a few years, I had like about $18,000 in that thing. It's crazy, you know, and I might've jacked it up to about $40. I don't remember all the details, but the point is not much coming out my check. So anyway, so what happens is, in 2008, the stock market was like doing this thing, going down and whatever. So I said, no more. So I cut it. I said, and I left it in there, but I know you're not taking no more money out of my check. So I wish I would have left it in though, because one, I forgot all about that account till about a couple years ago. I looked at the account, it had like $34,000 in it. You know, it still was doing its thing without me putting any more money. So that's when I said, oh, wait a minute. I might have missed the boat somewhat at my age, you know, in terms of that, but still I haven't. I can still make money, but I'm definitely gonna pass this to my information on to my son, my nephews, my nieces, and all my students that, you know. So anyway, I'm done. Thank you, Dr. H.
Thank you.
Oh, boy, I tell you. Yeah, that's good information, Brother Mashinda. All right, Brother Hembrick. Brother Hembrick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I don't have any questions or anything. All this is foreign to me, like a foreign language, so I'm just listening.
Okay. Well, you definitely invested, though. That's for sure. Yeah. All right, Professor Rod. You're on mute.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly, and I really enjoyed the commentary from everyone. Just have a few questions, and really want to thank you for being on the show and your insight and your direction. Is investment a gamble?
Let's put it like this. Now, there have been documentaries of recent, the way the stock market has gone because of what's called quantitative easing and what Chairman Fed Powell has been doing lately, has said it is a gamble, but at the same time, I'm going to say no. And I want to bring up something, what Doctor said, but also too want to not scare Linda, because Doctor started talking about the dark part of the stock market, so on and so forth. We don't want to scare Linda or anything like that. If you want to get into
it. Oh, no, I'm not scared. Definitely not.
Okay. Because there's something like Doctor, he's a professional. He's doing options. He's doing shorting. He's doing all of that. It's like, I want to pick his brain more about that at a later date, so on and so forth. But it's not a gamble if you know what you're doing. And I'm not saying like, you know, you go to Vegas, you see those people under a roulette wheel or blackjack. They know they got the whole game. You know, they're going to beat Vegas, so on and so forth. I say no, not as a gamble, for the simple fact the historical returns. The historical returns have taken people from poverty to prosperity. Okay. Like I said, maybe the first half of this year, as we are recording this on July 6, 2022, maybe that prosperity is not as what it used to be. But if you've been invested and you're a long-term investor, again, it goes from poverty to prosperity, or if you start at the prosperity level, it goes prosperity to even higher prosperity. So do I say it's a gamble? I say no, for the simple fact of this. There are certain funds where it's just like old-fashioned, nothing sexy about it, not the hot stock. And that's why I want to bring up like the Linda, so on and so forth. Linda, check out, again, I'm not recommending anything, but just, you know, just starting in to put you in a path of S&P 500 fund indexes. These are indexes that follow the S&P. So you had the 500 quote unquote best companies in America, and they follow their path, and you invest in this index, which again, you following that path where you can get stronger returns and positive returns. Like I said, this year, who knows, at the end of the day, who knows what tomorrow brings, but this year has been a little tricky, but at the same time you can get in at a lower point. And also too, when you're doing your research, and I say this to everybody, whether you're looking at mutual funds, indexes, or individual, look at the historical returns, okay? Look at the 5-year historical returns, 10-year historical returns, and start from there to see, like, if there's negative across the board, then there's where your gamble comes in. If you're investing in a company that's been negative for the last 10 years, yeah, you are gambling. But if you've been investing in a company where the last 10 years they've had double-digit returns, less of a gamble, more of a hedging your bet. So do I say it's a gamble? I say no. I say it's a gamble to not invest into the stock market.
All right. The second question, and I'll summarize that at the conclusion remark. The other question is, what role does racism play in the stock market? Well, for years, they wouldn't even let us invest.
Exactly. Historically, I was just going to say, historically, wouldn't let us invest. Matter of fact, I was doing some research on that as well before I came onto the podcast. It was like, yeah, if you was in a certain part of town and so on and so forth, like, yeah, the racism historically has played a role, which led to the I want to say the income gap, but the wealth gap. But now with the barriers of entry have been lowered through the trade accounts we talked about, the E-Trade, the Charles Schwab, so on and so forth. That does not play a role because it's more, I kid you not, there's a lot of algorithms out there, okay? A lot of algorithms where they're focused on pretty much what you're bringing to the table rather than as far as your investment and how much compared to what's your color. So yeah, historically, definitely, But now those barriers have limited, okay? So again, like I stated before, the only true two colors in America is green and gold, okay? It's like
I disagree with that, but let me just keep on moving. What about the role of inside trading?
Okay. Well, the role of inside trading is like this. And I've said this to my friend who I stated earlier that we started investing like in October. It's like, and I know Martha Stewart got caught for investment insider trading, so on and so forth.
A lot of people have, not just
a lot of people have. Yeah. So that's one like more of the more famous ones. I think personally, to be honest with you, it's like I'll compare it to like football in the South. Everybody was paying everybody even before they had the new deals where you can pay the athletes in college football legally. You know, Alabama's playing players back in the 70s and Georgia and all of them and so on and so forth, the big wigs. It's just that it's how you do it. Okay, so is there insider trading? Yes. It's just how you do it. Just like in Congress, are there bribes? Yes. It's just how you do it. It's just like make sure you're not getting caught, so on and so forth. Now, am I on the inside? No, I'm not on the inside. I'm still looking from the outside information. But yeah, there's definitely insider trading going on. It's just about how you take that information and how you apply it. And also, too, your network of people. You know, if you have a hater in your network, yeah, they're probably going to blow the whistle on you. But if everybody's on the same path, then yeah. But that doesn't also mean like you're gaming the market. You know, like I said, they got the inside. If you're looking at the market closely, you see something rising, so on and so forth. They'll tell somebody on the financial news network, it'll leak out. And then you, if you feel that company is strong, you ride with it. Even though maybe somebody put in more shares than you do, nevertheless, it could be a rising boat, a rising tide.
All right. Now, and I, the first part you were saying that, you know, you use a lot of Europeans as examples. You got the crypto arena now. You have Odell Beckham say, pay me in Bitcoin. You have...
Take now.
Black people invest, but they invest not in stock markets. They invest their time and labor. Sometimes they invest in their children, getting them an education. Do you recommend people because sometimes you look at investment as a class thing, working class people. Or people with liquidable funds. When you live in paycheck to paycheck and you barely making it, then inflation come in and you really barely making it. See, there's reasons a lot of poor people don't invest. They don't have it. They don't have the liquidable fund. And we represent a large portion based on statistics as far as the average pay that Black people make. They used to say this, a white boy with a high school diploma makes more than a Black man with a college degree. They used to say those things. Now, I'm just asking you, what role does liquidable funds play in investment from the standpoint of you encouraging people to invest?
Well, first thing I say this is like, is of course, the definition of what is exactly your liquid funds and what is your budget. Now, as I stated before, it's like, again, you don't want to invest your mortgage or rent. You don't want to invest the food money. But the GDP of America is 70% consumerism. So, and it's a lot of consumerism done by low wage income workers. So if they have the money to go get, let's say, not the necessities, then how come you don't have the money to invest in yourself? You know, because again, like 70%, that's 7 out of 10, where, again, it's all about consumerism, what drives the American economy. And again, and yes, it's on different levels, higher incomes, middle incomes, lower incomes, but a lot of lower incomes do, let's just say, not use their money wisely from the pool of money they have, which may not be as liquid. Okay. So that being said, if the kids are fed, got the roof over their head, the lights turn on, get to watch the favorite thing on Netflix, if all that's taken care of. Okay.
No, the reason I raised that is because when you were talking in the beginning, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even Malcolm X, always talked about the value of land and the value of doing for self and the importance of investing in your own community, using your money, turning the dollar over. So we've always talked that way. I mean, BTL, you know, we used to have Black Enterprise, a magazine that used to keep the top 100 Black businesses. And you know, you look at that and things of this nature. You have a lot of people that own franchises, you know, and things of this nature. They invest their money in franchises and things of this nature. My point is that because I'm for people like yourself starting literacy classes for juniors and seniors in high school, you know, not just for investment, but just the importance of keeping your credit together, how to, you know, the understanding banking and understanding the value of property. Sort of like what Joe used, Brother Henry used to tell his classes and things of this nature. Sometimes people invest in what they call lumping activities, selling drugs and using fake credit cards and hustling. And so my point is that sometimes you have to look at the circumstances we as Black people came up under. I think Carter G. Woodson said the miseducation of the Negro in his book in 1930. So it's not that sometimes that we won't invest, don't invest. We're not been trained because most of our parents and grandparents, I say grandparents now, never even thought about investment. They're laborers and they just wanted us to get an education to go further. We, even though it seemed like we're a long time out of the Holocaust of enslavement, but we're not out of the long-term effects that it has had on us. And the lack of trust in institutions, the same investments that people invested in, they, you know, you say it's not gambling, but stock markets fall, you lose. I mean, sometimes you can invest in something and you lose. That's gambling. That's a risk. It's always good. It's like this. And then I said, when people on the way to Vegas, they got all kind of billboards of people smiling at the slot machine and they're grinning. They never show the pictures of the people leaving Vegas. You understand? I mean, you know, they've had people commit suicide because they betted the whole rent. So my point is that Black people, Latinos, white, even white, many of them are not investors. If everybody invested, there would be no winner. So you got to have a minority of investment. What Wall Street is about, you understand, keeping up with the investments and what's the new. But at the same time, we as the people must begin to do as you say, and people like yourself can maybe start a summer camp. My son, all my sons and daughters, they into investment, Bitcoin, whatever, and they know it. They say, don't mess with money unless you can invest it and let it sit for 10 years. You know, and that's their mentality. I tell them I want my money off the top. Straight out. I don't want no coin, no wallet. I just want some dead presidents. You understand? Because I'm 74 years old. I ain't got I don't want to be 80 rich. You know, I want to spend money now. You know, now they are young. And that's why I think it's good to start the young and thinking that you can always buy a house, because if you lose it, they're foreclosed. You buy a car, they repossess it. But can you handle cash? Can you go into a bank and get $10,000 cash? Because you got a track record of paying cash back. It's easy to pay with what they call secured loans. But when you're dealing with just straight out signature loan, that's a whole new different mentality and whole new different discipline. And I just want to say again, we thank you for your wealth of knowledge. But it's a lot to it, and I do believe it's a gamble. And I believe racism still exists in it. And the racism is to discourage us from getting involved and to make it so hard for us to get involved. Sante sana.
All right.
Respond
to that.
Yeah, you want to respond?
Yeah, I want to respond to that.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. For the simple fact, like, I love the fact of, like, again, investing is just not the stock market, like you say, like franchising, so on and so forth. It's like, that's great investment, you know, business, whether it's in our community or another community, long story short, owning. That's what I was talking about earlier, owning things. And when we came from off the boats, we was the workers and had still, as you said, now we have like that, still that slave mentality in some aspects. But let me go on a tangent about this. Again, like I said earlier, I was a baseball fan, or still a baseball fan. In 2004, Boston Red Sox won the World Series. I'm not a Boston Red Sox fan, I ain't stretching the imagination, but the Boston Red Sox before then didn't win the World Series for like 1,000 years. I'm exaggerating, but been a long time, and they feel those curses, so on and so forth. Their pitcher, I won't name him now because he's very controversial, but he said in this interview, why not us? How come we can't win the World Series? Just because we had all this past bad luck going against the Yankees, going against the Reds, going against the Mets. You say, why not us? Why can't we win this year? And that's why I say the response to you is like, yes, we've had a history of discouragement. Even as today, yeah, there is discouragement across the board. Not saying it's not, but also at the same time, I'm saying like, why can't it be us? You know, like, even though the past was tough and the present is not smooth at times, but also too, like, why not us? Why can't we not invest? If we put our money together, which is green, like I said, my best friend or my brother and my other friend, we put our money together and we just started. We started like back in October. I put my money back 20 years ago. Okay, just piece by piece. Anytime I get a couple of dollars, my first mentality is like I like how Machinda's nephew, he wants to invest. So when you get a paycheck, you want to invest. That's how I am too. As soon as I get my paycheck, I'm invest. Matter of fact, they take money out before I invest. All right. Then after I pay my bills, I invest some more. I mean, sometimes I over invest. You know, I look up, since we get paid once a month, I'm midway through the month and I can't afford a cheeseburger. Simple fact, all my money went into investment, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, the past has been horrific. The present, at times, difficult. But again, why not us? Why can we not change the future, even though we've had a not great past? And that's all I'm saying. Like, seriously, why not us? Why can't we do it? Because now we're at the stage of there are more of us educated. Okay, and we also too, we had to do it in secret as they did during slave time. You know, if a slave found out they can read, they kill them, right? Now, when we read, that can help us ascend to another level. You know, so why not us? Why can't we be successful in the stock market? How come we can't be like Robert Smith? Okay, again, not athletic prowess. He just used his mind. Why can't we do that?
Yeah.
Well, you got go ahead, Roger.
The thing is, as I always say, we all, as learned individuals, and as we live and age, we keep picking up information if we're open to it. And that's what we're doing. And one person going to see it this way, another person going to see it that way. But we all here for the same reason, and it's a good thing. And Professor Ross said is financial literacy is good. And that's what it's about. It's about exposing the information. And if there is, we take a poor person that throw a few pennies to the side every time and just say, I ain't gonna mess with that. I know it's tough. And keep throwing them pennies to the side. Before you know it, just like Brother Mashinda said, he threw that 40 bucks to the side, and now it's like, you know, I don't know if it was monthly. I guess it was monthly or every check. And now that joker got $34,000. You know, it's where there's a will, there's a way. And that's what we do here. We make a way because we have a will. So, you know, that information is excellent from everybody. Okay, Professor Rod, what you want to say?
Well, I agree with the brother is saying, the doctor, good Dr. H is saying, because, I mean, he's correct. We should be an investment, but be mindful of the pitfalls. That's the only thing I'm saying. Oklahoma, Tulsa, they did good. White man burned it down and took it. Greenwood, they burned it down and took it. They're Huntington Beach. They took the man property, got it back after 100 years. You know, I mean, I understand struggle. I just don't want to play down racism and its role in our economic issues as a people and our divisiveness in our people. You got entertainers, you know, that's billionaires. And sports is a entertainment. It's sports entertainment. That's what Harry Edwards said. You know, they get paid whether they win or lose. You know, they're on the contract. Then there are people who make big money off of betting on horses. And they get gold from racetrack to racetrack. Study scratch sheets all day. They win some, they lose some, but it's an investment. You know, but this investing in the stock market or in property or whatever, it's just another means of the medium of exchange and hopefully that you profit from it. That's what it is. Our major investment has always been labor and time and skills. That's all we had. And every one of them people may be an entertainer, or a corporate, or a stock investor, started from humble beginnings, the majority of them. You understand? And they work their way up to the point that they could invest. And I'm for that. But when you're young, you start off with three kids before you get out of high school or college. It's pretty hard to have some liquidable funds. Sure. You understand? Now you're single. You know, hey, you can do some things. But when you got a family, and especially in California, just paying rent, not owning, just paying rent, it's tough. And so that's the only thing. I'm not making excuses for people. I'm just looking at the reality. Because I taught business management. I taught the whole gamut of business classes. And you know, most African-Americans do not save, but most people in this country don't save their money. Most people in this country don't have $400 of emergency money, most people. But them that do, we're thinking, and they sacrifice. De Silva, our art teacher, he don't never shop for clothes. You understand? He's wearing the same clothes he's been having. But he got a big home in Arizona, you know, living across from the golf course. He had a green put in his backyard. That was his priority. But like the good Dr. H. say, you got some brothers that look like Zell Jeweler around the neck. You understand? Going up there and say, hey, are they investing in gold or are they flash? You know, it could be both. And then they get mad when they get robbed. And you know, you flashing, you know, but anyway. This is a good session. I'm enjoying
it. All right. Brother Basinda said he wanted to say something again. Brother Basinda?
No, I just interjected listening to everybody. You know, Dr. H. I took a class back in like 1981 or 80 or something like that years ago. And it was a class called Organizational Management in Low-Income Neighborhoods. It was the upper division African American history class. And the thing that I remember that the professor, Dr. J. Owen Smith, you know, brought out, he talked about conspicuous consumption, talked about, you know, Black people, you know, in the neighborhood were conspicuous consumers, you know. So I fit in that same category growing up. And I'm probably still somewhat conspicuous to a lesser degree, you know, working toward, you know, where I should be, I guess, at this point in my life, you know. But I just wanted to point out, I understand, you know, the premise of what I'm hearing is that, you know, yeah, we're in a bind. A lot of people are in a check to check or you know, in a situation. You know, but a lot of that is because we are conspicuous consumers, you know, no matter, you know, I mean, if we worked at McDonald's or the aircraft, you know, Hughes Aircraft or wherever you work at, you know, at the end of the day.
Brother Machenda, can I interject right quick?
Yes.
Can you give us a definition of conspicuous, say that word again, conspicuous?
Conspicuous consumption basically is, yeah. It, you know, We do a lot. Okay, in other words, say when you're planning your meal, okay, we can go like Brother Hemprick say, do we grow our vegetables and in our backyard, like our tomatoes and things like that? We can save money that way, and then we have fresh vegetables, good vegetables. Okay, well, we run to the market, to the supermarket, Walmart, and we spend money there. Okay, we go to Taco Bell. So in other words, we're not conscious of how we're spending our money, no matter how much we make, you know? So back to the financial literacy, that's where you learn that, hey, you know, this is the game that's being played on, you know, everybody on this call know about student loans. Not that they took one out. I took one out for about $1,200 and paid it off because one of my elders at the college, live poor, do you get out of here? Don't do it. And so I didn't understand totally what he was talking about. I understood plain English. And so I got it, but I trusted him and I didn't get any more loans, because what happens is when you don't have money, you know, when you get some, you know, or you have access to something, whether it's a credit card or what have you, we tend to get these credit cards and we'll run them up. That's conspicuous consumption. Yeah, that's money you don't have, you know, but you still spend it. But I'm not hating, don't get it twisted now, because some people, that's how they eat. Hey, no matter what, we got to eat. So there is a war going on. But what I'm saying is, I think from the financial, you know, once you slowly but surely, or however you get it, it's not even, I mean, it ain't even about investing, you know, in stock. I mean, that's a next level thing. Just the fact that how you spend your money. I think Dr. Rod talked about the credit rating, how you protect your credit. You know, to be able to purchase maybe a car that, you know, or what have you. So, but anyway, the conspicuous consumption is like a lot, you know, not only like, I wouldn't say frivolous spending, because food is a necessity, but it's how you do it, you know? And so I think, I would like to think that I understand what he said, that the Dr. J. Owen Smith was telling me when I was very young that, you know, hey, you got to watch how you spend your money. because, or the community at large, the it was called organizational management in low-income neighborhoods, and he was talking about conspicuous consumption. And one of the reasons why we remain at a certain level is because it's like the Hispanics, they live 5 or 10 in one house. And then they, not all of them, we can't give everybody credit, but it's a lot of them, that pool together. So if we pooled our resources together, if Dr. H's homeboy would have understood him at that level, or if he would have conveyed him at a younger age, I mean, we don't have any faults here. It's what it is. But now it's like, hey, man, hey, this is what's going on. Life moves fast and we don't do what it might not come out to the way, like Monday morning quarterback. And after, you're checking out the game after it's been played, you figure out, man, okay, we need to work this out. We need to do this. We need to go this direction. Well, the point I'm making is so you take America's like a corporation, and they have assets. And, the number one asset that the United States has is student loans. You can look it up yourself, student loans. And so I work at a college and we just started doing student loans a few years ago. I wish we didn't do them because we have people that's coming in there. And don't get me wrong, there are several students that say, hey, I need whatever I can get because I'm going to make better for myself. I can use these resources to keep my bills. I can go to, I don't have to work while I'm going to school. So don't get me wrong, those that are organized to use the money and then be prepared to pay it back 6 months after they graduate. But that's not the case in a lot of cases. People see $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 for the school year or more, and they grab it and they spend it, and then now their credit rating is messed up. They're getting they're getting their checks they're taking money out of their checks, they're garnishing their checks, or what have you. They run into financial ruin, So getting on the right track financially, knowing how to go down, it's just a tool. That's all for survival, It's like we can play the poor game or we can play, and when I say play the poor game, we can go on the knowledge that we have. And it's not about just getting rich. It's just about, watching what you're doing with what you make and what you're doing. And if you like putting your money in a savings account, it doesn't draw any interest. But my mother gave me a passbook when I was a little kid, and I thought that was a big thing. We put a couple dollars in it, but it doesn't make any money. It doesn't do it. So there are better monetary or financial products out there that will yield a better profit than, say, putting your money in a savings account, but I'm a skeptic and I'm still a skeptic, but I've taken some chances. But at the end of the day, that's part of it. Cause we once, like when slavery, black people were the commodity. And when you are a conspicuous consumer and you're fueling the GDP, as Dr. H say, 70% of the GDP is consumerism. That means that, all the spending, frivolous spending, or reckless spending, or uninformed spending, or whatever you want to call it. I ain't hating. It's just, and I've been part of that. But I'm trying to get out of that funk slowly but surely. That's my thing. But, of course, I respect people. And if you work at Walmart or Taco Bell or IBM, hey, whatever. But it's what you do with it. And you'd be surprised that a lot of people have made a lot of money making money like minimum wage. People have put a little bit, just a little bit at a time. Little bit at a time. And then, it's exponential, compounded interest, understanding that. I just wanted to interject that, but I'm good.
All right. Thanks for that. So, Hembrick, I don't know if you wanted to say something.
Yeah. I'm apologize. I started listening out in the beginning and I kind of dozed off, a little tired today. And I have a buddy, old teammate of mine. That's all he talks about is investment, investment. He's driving Porsches and the whole family is driving Porsches and all that. But I'm kind of like from the old school, like Professor Ra. When I was coming along, they said the only thing real is real estate. And that's the route I went, listened to some older brothers, and I've been able to acquire, you know, quite a bit of, well, just a little bit of property over the years. And the investment has really gone crazy from like 85 on. I've been investing in real estate. And like, for example, I bought one, first house I bought was for $66,000 and now it's worth $600,000. And I'm in the process of fixing that up now, getting everything new on the house. But I'm going to look into it a little bit. I have a few nickels I can spare to throw on that side, but I really don't know what I'm doing. And I'm going to re-listen to the tape, you know, to kind of pick up on what I missed. And I'm going to call my buddy who's been bombarding me for the last couple of years about this very subject and see, you know, what can be done. I do research, but I'm mostly historical researcher. I don't, you know, business and all of that has never been my cup of tea other than the real estate aspect of it. And I just bought those and let them sit and just let the years go by. And, you know, because I used to teach my students, I don't care how raggedy a piece of property is that you buy, it's going to increase by $10,000 to $15,000 every year, wherever it is. And if you fix it up and everybody else starts to fix theirs up, the value grows. So that's what I've been banking in, you know, most of my adult life. But
yeah, amendments, that's a dirty word to me. But and also too, just the school that I work at, and I worked at K-12, but the high school level, love it. And not only that, just the students I work with, let's keep it real, they are of like my color, and then even of the browner version of my color. But at the same time, it's like somebody took a chance on me way back when, just want to pay it forward.
Yes, sir. So what you want to leave us with, the brother Dr. H?
I want to leave with, from what I've heard, this has been a tremendous, first of all, thank you again. This has been tremendous, educational. Like I admit, I'm on summer break, so my brain has been turned off. So it's turned on again today. But also too, just hearing that my focus was on investment stock market, but investment real estate, investment franchise, investing in yourself, that's it. And that's what we haven't always done on a consistent basis. So simple fact, we can invest in yourself. And like I said, Shinda, like you like 30, 40,000, you put away on $20, $40. That was like pretty much my whole premise of this conversation. It's like, you don't have to start with 10,000. You can start with a little bit, but the acorn grows into the mighty oak, right? So man, you put that away, you got 40,000. Some people don't have that. And then talking about like real estate, so on and so forth. Some people don't and have not invested in real estate. And time has passed. So this has all been wonderful.
Let me just add one more thing I think hasn't been mentioned. And Brother Mashinda was kind of hitting on it with the conspicuous spending. Now, a key word to a lot of accomplishment is sacrifice. You know, we have a nature of wanting certain things and wanting some things that's not too good for us. And we partake in activities that may not be all that great. Or you just, you know, you want to do something, you may want to cut the activity in half and sacrifice that one half and put that one half into some investment. So I think that's another good word that needs to be added to the conversation this evening. Yeah, well, when you want to accomplish something and when you have goals, sacrifice is a key element in accomplishing what you want to accomplish. So, Professor Rob, before we leave, do we have a guest for Monday? You're on mute.
Yeah, but I can't think of who it is. I'll call you in the morning. Okay. But I just want to say this right quick. You know, there's so much in the struggle that we're in, whereas we sometimes forget that there are people doing what we say we need to do. When you don't,
I mean, like, they got the 100 black colleges. They're focusing on investments now, you know, as a classes. I just spoke to a group of young men who are part of a Kappa's League, a fraternity league. They're in high school, juniors and seniors. And they have a financial literacy class a part of their training. My son is going around the country saying that if students get good grades, they should get X amount of stock, you know, as a motivating thing for youth to make them learn and teach it. So that when they leave high school, they're not broke. They have stock. There's so much going on in the movement that's doing exactly what Dr. H is saying. People are trying to wake their children up. I mean, a lot of us didn't vote because our parents didn't vote. A lot of us didn't get into investment because our parents didn't invest. And they didn't train us. Schools, as Rasha Keith so eloquently brought up, hey, the state tell you what the curriculum is. And that's why you don't have a financial literacy class on the ACT test or the SAT test or the outcomes of a class, you know, but you got to build it. Where it's not. But there are a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. Because I see them and I hear them and, you know, and as Machinda said and the good doctor said, there's stuff all over the internet about investments. You know, so I'm optimistic that those that got the liquidable funds and can sit on money and let it grow, it's just like people don't save because they want their money now. But you know, you got to invest, and I believe it. But I do believe what Brother Hembrick said, that the best investment is always in land. For the quick turnover or for the long term. Sante sana.
I want to say something real quick. And just recently, I was going to let it go, but like Dr. H, you've been on it all night, and Professor Rob brought up something about the gambling and the racial stuff. And that's all true. And it's racial because we don't get the information, man. You know, I talked to Ross Key a few weeks ago. We have a close friend we grew up with. He called me 10, 11 o'clock at night, wanted to know something about the stock market, what to invest in. And I told him, I said, hey, man, only way you make money in the market is inside information. All these rich cats, man, no inside information. I was able to speak to a few guys, man, that was involved with the original savings and loan stuff. But you're talking about real estate. You know, you don't own that land. You don't own a house. You just own that deed that says you have a right to stay there. You don't own none of that land. You just have a piece of paper that gives you the right to convey to stay there. So that's a gamble. But I'm surprised him break Joe, and I want him to, you know, thought he was going to say something about it. So I just know a little bit about the conductors. Back in the days in the 20s and 30s, all the black conductors on the trains that was millionaires because they would sit there and serve all these white people and they'd talk about inside trading. And at the next stop, the blacks would call home and say, hey, go buy this stock, because they heard all this stuff on those trains, man. There was a lot of black conductors, you know, the little guys worked those trains, those multimillionaires, undercover multimillionaires, man. Because they would sit here and listen to all those inside trades on those trains and guys conducting businesses, you know, business and doing a little inside trading. And I'm sorry Linda's gone, because I was going to tell her, she opened up an account, please don't do margin trading. When you open up an account, don't let them talk you and get in a margin account until you know what you're doing. And it's like Brother H said, it's only gambling when you don't know what you're doing. And, you know, you can always make an investment. You can hedge your investment like the pros do, and you can always buy insurance. on your stocks, your portfolio. You can always buy calls and puts just to sure make sure if your stuff goes down, you got insurance to cover all your losses. I go heavy. I always buy if I'm not sure, buy a call or a put to cover my investment. But yeah, man, if Dr. H, you're talking about that school, the little training, if you ever get something started, man, where you get a bunch of kids and you're trying to trade, and you, like I say, I will give you an example, get them doing paper trading, and the top five kids, man, that, you know, that can come after, you know, 4 or 5 months, 6 months, if they got a successful trading thing from the paper trading, and you want to give them some scholarships, man, I can support 4 or 5 kids at $500 to open up their first account, man. If you can get something started, man, get them paper trading, the top 4 or 5 kids, man, that made money. And if you want to get them with TD Ameritrade, Merrill, you know, Merrill Edge, it's Charles Schwab. I'm familiar with everybody, damn every broker out there, man. I've been to them all. If you want to get a scholarship to the top kid, man, you know, get some people, man, put some money together, get these kids in there doing some paper trading, and get them, you know, reward the kids that was able to, you know, over 6 months, make a profit in the account. And we can get them started with a real live account, man. I don't know what the procedure would be. I don't know how that, you know, you got to get some, you know, pass through the school, the district, the parents. But, you know, I'm willing to support, you know, 4 or 5 kids, $500 a piece, man, to get them account started after, you know, you get the kids and know what they're doing. You know, motivate them, man, to get in there and learning and, you know, paper trading to show that, you know, because we can always follow them and see how they're doing and reward them with it, some real accounts, man. Let them go out in the real world after 6 months and do that, man. You
know, brother doctor. Yeah. Brother doctor, we could do all that. We could do all of that here.
Yeah. Well, hey, you guys get it started. I can support 4 or 5 kids, man. You know, with a scholarship, a little something. You know, some of you guys on here can add to it. Get them account started. But let them, you know, do some paper trading. Get your little thing, summer thing going. And at the end of the summer thing, whoever got the top, who's ever profitable.
Brother doctor, I'm on top of that.
Who's ever profitable, man?
I'm on top of that, so don't worry about it. We gonna do it. We have to wait for nobody else to do it. We'll do it. So now, Dr. H,
awesome.
excellent show this evening. I'm glad you came on because you didn't start something. And because you started something, we gonna finish it. All right, so I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on. And you always welcome to come back on. Matter of fact, you're going to be part of the team. I'm already electing you to be that. So I'm already going to impose on you.
You know what? I'm gonna tell you a little inside joke within our RSP family and stuff like that. I'm going to come on as many times you come to the IEP meetings.
Oh, man, now you barter. Oh,
I had to say that, but I'm going to come on way more than that. I'm going to come on way more than that. I had to say that.
Hey, no, but that's good. I'm going to hold you to it because I'm going to start coming to IEP meetings. Now you said that. All right,
okay.
Yes, sir. Okay, so now I secured a guest for next week, but I haven't got the topic yet. But we will have a guest for next week. And if we don't, just in case something happened, we're going to have the community, Black Community News Forum, and that's by our master teacher, Professor Amin Ra. He came up with that, and that is our ultimate substitution for a guest that don't appear. Black Community News Forum, because it's always things to talk about. All right, everybody, please stay on after I stop this recording. Dr. A, I need to ask you something. And I just, again, wonderful show. And Conscious Corner and Each One Teach One. Good evening.